driving. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the west side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three.
No, it's good.
She got it.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Happy Thursday, birds. Welcome into this edition of the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. I'm Mikey Fornelli, alongside Blake Bogart and Dane Dreyfus. Welcome in, fellas. How are you doing?
I couldn't tell you. I deserve my five-minute soapbox after picking the Bears and Commanders game, right? But then I think that was the only game I picked correct, and my Packers lost. So I give that soapbox over to Blake Beauregard. How are you, man?
I'm great. You know, I love being the substitute teacher on the Red Zone for you guys. I feel like I'm here every other week. I get a bye week, I get a week's worth of rest, and I'm right back up to pitch.
Well, that's a good point to bring up. David Moses resting up. He's sick this week, so best wishes to David, and hope he joins us again next week feeling all good. But we're going to start with some Redbird football, and who better to have be our guest host tonight than Blake, who was play-by-play in it for the Redbirds football team on homecoming Saturday last week. Blake, from the booth, from your bird's eye view, what did you see?
I love that mention of bird's eye view.
Yeah, shameless plug for the show at the end of the month.
Well, what's funny is David was on the call with me as well. That was probably one of the best calls that I've ever been on. It was an absolute slugfest of a game, 12-10 in favor of IASU. It was ugly, but now we're in contention for the lead in the Missouri Valley Football Conference. Our next three guys, though, I want to sort of take a look at that right now, is Indiana State 1-5, North Dakota State 5-2, and Youngstown State 3-3, all of which are on the road. And we've seen this Redbird team succeed at home, and they've done that well up to that point. And I think that something is going to be really crucial for them going forward is this defense, because we've heard this saying time and time again. It's a cliche saying, but I'm going to use it. Defense travels, and this defense has been stepping up for them at home recently.
I'm so disappointed that we lost to Southern Illinois now. For in those jerseys too.
Yeah,
and we're just
those jerseys were a pain from an announcer's perspective, but they were very good looking from a fan's perspective.
And a little teaser for a segment we're gonna have later on. Speaking of jerseys too.
With the NHL jerseys coming up. But right. You were saying.
Overall, like this defense is legit. I have a lot of faith in our quarterback to get the job done. Like, he's a pretty good game manager, and then our schedule is very fair coming up. I mean, it's on the road, which those games are any given Saturday. I mean, you never know what's going to happen. But personally, if you get those three wins, this team's legit. I'm excited. I'm really excited.
North Dakota is, I'm not going to lie, that is an incredibly challenging one. But I feel like you're sort of getting a true sample size of what this team is going to look like on the road. Because you go to Indiana State, 1-5 on the season, they're having a rough one. So you get a team that's coming off of a rough season. You go against North Dakota State, who was a leader in the Missouri Valley Conference. And then you get Youngstown State, who is a middle-of-the-pack team right now, sitting at 3-3. Obviously, these records are going to change by the time that they actually get there. And maybe some momentum will have shifted in favor of these teams. But I feel like we're really going to get a true sample size of what this team is made of based off of these matchups.
Well, and the last two is a tale of two different teams. I mean, South Dakota State's one of the best teams in the FCS, let alone the Missouri Valley Football Conference. So you would assume that second-to-last game of the year, the last road game, is probably a loss if you're looking at it realistically. But going back home on November 19th, that's Western Illinois, and that's one of the worst teams in the Missouri Valley Football Conference. So if you do go 3-2 over your next five games, that's a 7-4 team. And as Steve Cease, the WZND faculty advisor, and I were talking about a little bit earlier, you can't deny a 7-win team should not be in the FCS playoffs. So there is room to think ISU should be in the first round of the FCS playoffs if they go 3-2 in the next couple of games.
I just like the way the schedule shakes out, though, too, because it's just timing, and just you don't want to face a hot Illinois State team, too. It's all about momentum. Like, if you're going in with wins, and you like, it's a confidence builder, and I feel like that was like a big thing for volleyball too. We were talking about is like, if you get on these streaks, but this team has had everything go their way this year, and honestly, I'm gonna say it, they ruined Wisconsin's season.
Well, I was gonna say something else about Wisconsin. I think the Redbirds should really be looked at as 4-1, to be honest. I think the only true loss that I felt like, wow, we could have won that game and we lost, was Southern, which we really came back in the second half. But that Wisconsin loss, Blake and I were there. You were there as well, Dane. At the end of the day, was that really something that we should be judged up against among other FCS teams? No. I mean, yeah, Wisconsin hasn't had the best season since then, lost their coach, etc. But they were obviously a way better team than we were. It was a punching bag.
Yeah, and it's not the same with, what was it? Who beat Northwestern? Was it South Dakota? Or
yeah, it was South Dakota.
Okay, because it's
oh, the, I'm sorry. It was Southern Illinois.
It's the maroon Missouri Valley teams that just screw me up.
They all wear those darker colors. And so you can't mix
them up. It's wicked. But overall, like, you look at them beating Northwestern, and it's not even in the same category. Because Northwestern got beat way worse by Wisconsin than Illinois State did.
Mm-hmm.
I think they might have scored one or two touchdowns, but Illinois State was hanging in there. And honestly, I think that the whole game narrative changes if Anixtad doesn't throw that pick six on their first drive.
I was going to say the same exact thing, Dane, but I wanted to go back to something you said earlier, that everything was going right for the Redbirds this season. I actually disagree with you on that. I think they face quite a bit of adversity. You lose your starting running back in the first game of this season. You go down, you have your confidence sort of beat up by Wisconsin, and then to bounce back the way they did, and they take a game against Eastern Illinois, and they get this hot streak going early on, that shows a lot of adversity for me, especially to see a guy like Winkers, right, a redshirt freshman, step up in the backfield and take over.
Friend of the pod, he had a merch drop. I think I'm going to buy a hat.
What's it look like?
It looks like the Washington Commanders logo. I'm not going to lie, but it's Winkers, right? It's really cool. I'm a fan. It's like two W's put together, and it's black with gold, and all the proceeds, if I'm not mistaken, go to his biological family in Haiti, which is awesome. So cool.
Very cool. And we talked to Dayton and Maya a little bit about a couple weeks ago about how these players are using their ability with the name, image, and likeness stuff to do stuff like that. I mean, Dan, you wrote a story on that. What else do you know about that?
I mean, Kobe Rios had his thing where he was giving back too, but I enough of the shameless plugs. Let's just plug this football team and how good they're going to be for the rest of the season, especially on the backs of Winkers, right, and Brock Anixtad, or Zach Anixtad. We would like to get Brock going a little bit more in the offense.
Brock got it going though on Saturday. Mm-hmm. He was on the field quite a bit, and I've been confused up to this point as to why we've been, you know, sitting him on the sideline for a lot. We've been getting him a lot in the special teams game, going in the punt game. Like, that's great and all, but he's such an explosive player, and to know that he has that chemistry with his quarterback, who is his brother, of course.
You
know,
what comes first, football or blood? It's the same. That's the answer.
I feel like it's such a deep receiver room that they're sort of, it's an embarrassment of riches almost, which is why he really hasn't gotten to see the field up to this point. But Zach on his own has been stellar for the Birds. 212 passing yards per game up to this point. He's almost eclipsed 1,300 yards. Guys, the Redbird passing attack last year as a whole had 1,300 yards in a season. Zach is almost at that mark in only six games.
It's insane. And I love how much Anixtad lets himself rely on the nice tight end work that the ISU offense can rely on. Because, between Bryson Deming and Tanner Talwa, they have two really solid tight ends. And just every time they need a big play on a third down, you just see it's usually Tyler go up the middle, and Anixtad usually finds him right there. And that's unfortunately the same play that had that pick in Wisconsin, but usually it works out here in the FCS.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a scary moment there on Saturday, too, when we saw Taula. He came up with a huge, I think it was a 30-40-yard run where he had South Dakota defenders draped all over him, and he had offensive linemen pushing him forward, and he came up holding that shoulder a little bit. Looks like he's going to be good to go for the next game, of course. But you're right, Mikey. We are just so deep across the board, and I'm really interested to see sort of what this offense does to make any sort of adjustments going down in the season.
Well, can we talk a little bit about the kicking game? Because what an interesting game that Ian Wagner had, because he went 2-for-2 from field goals, but he missed the PAT on the final touchdown of the game. And then 45 yards is no joke, especially in FCS football. Like, that is a long kick.
He was, of course, at one point, he was the nation's number one overall ranked kicker coming out of high school. At one point he was. I'm not sure what he ended up leaving high school as, but at one point he was that dude, and he showed it off as well against, I believe it was Northern Iowa, where he went 3-for-4 and he hit a 41-yarder. So he just topped his career long in back-to-back games.
I mean, I think for this team to succeed I don't know how to explain it, but they need to keep the opposing defense or the opposing offense off the field, because their defense is their strength. But if they can just score points and stay on the field for as long as possible, to score like minimal points, they could win games by only scoring about 15 to 20 points on offense. That's how good I think this defense is.
Well, it's crazy too, because I think the biggest stat that we should think about with this Redbirds team is they potentially beating Youngstown State and Western Illinois, hopefully, knock on wood, would go 5-1 at home, and then really a questionable loss against Southern that you really could have won. So they haven't been 5-1 at home since
was it PI?
Since, well, yeah, it probably was. And they haven't been 5-1 at home since 2018. Since then, in 2019, they were 4-2 at home. 2020, they were 1-1, but that was a shorter season. And then 2021, they were 2-3 at home. So to see them be able to get those wins when they can, when they don't have to travel, they have the whole week to live at home, practice, live in their own beds, and then they get to go win on the field, that's impressive. And that's why you're going to see them possibly make it back to the FCS playoffs.
Do we burn those black uniforms for like all the sports? Every team that lost weekend, in those uniforms.
Yeah, and it was kind of rough because it was family weekend, I believe, right? So most stadiums were pretty packed. I mean, the volleyball team tried to break a attendance record on that Friday night. It didn't work out, but they still had a lot of fans there. It was the most attended volleyball game in Illinois so far.
Came up a little bit short there.
Yeah, they came up, yeah.
If we're touching on women's volleyball, though, too, is they've had an interesting couple of days, especially with the medical retirements, which we touched on last week. But we are seeing some freshmen step up in their place, though, because Reagan Haith got Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Week.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny to me that the Redbirds volleyball team has now only had two wins in conference after such a strong out-of-conference start, and both wins are against Indiana State. So just specifically the Sycamores can't catch a break, but... Now they have an interesting weekend coming up. They're going to be back on the road against two teams they haven't seen, at least this year or in recent years, in Belmont and Murray State. Of course, the two newest members of the Missouri Valley. And this is beyond volleyball. How does it feel in general for Missouri Valley teams to have to travel to Kentucky and Tennessee to play games in conference?
Well, they weren't bad to start off the season is the thing. I mean, remember, they had the Beale Street Challenge where they were in Memphis for a couple of days there over in September where they went 2-1. They won 2-1. And they dropped a game against Memphis. But besides that, they beat two pretty good volleyball teams in Queens University of Charlotte and Oakland University as well.
But we're at the point where we're talking about almost a completely different team. And that's crazy. Just thinking
about the turnaround. The roster is different.
Yeah, yeah.
By those means. Yeah, I wanted to clarify what you meant as well, because it's crazy. I mean, keep going with that.
The turnover, it almost feels like with Allie Matters, like she's been managing with what she could work with because of injuries. They've run into a lot of injury problems this year. But it almost seems like it's a completely new like team that we were looking at from like months ago. Yeah. And we're looking at like Sarah Kushner's hurt with her ankle. And that was a gutty win they had against Indiana State. And they ended, what was that, a 5-game slide?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, who do you go to in those dying moments? And Kendi Hilliard looked mm-hmm. really good. She looked really aggressive, getting a lot of overhand smashes and with intensity. And then Reagan Haith was huge on the defensive side of the ball, which is something the team has struggled with all year. And they've been leaning on two freshmen and Emily Weber and Reagan Haith to get that job done.
There is no doubt that the future for this team is bright if they are all still around in 2 years.
Right.
That's the problem. And that's the problem with most mid-major schools. And that's something we've seen with the Redbird volleyball program in recent years, especially.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you said it, Mikey. Definitely a bit of a disappointing loss to have people like Tamara Otene end up leaving the program and go and see brighter pastures, we'll say, over at Michigan State.
Yeah.
But it definitely hurts. But to see this team, I wasn't expecting much of them. You know, to lose your head coach, to lose so many contributors to the team, I wasn't expecting them to come out to a hot start. But I think that it's just impressive that they were able to put together that hot start.
Well, exactly. It's just a tease. It was like you kind of expected this with a new head coach and a young roster losing two of its best players in Aaliyah Moore and Tamara Otene. But then you see them beat Cincinnati to open the season. You see them fight hard against FSU and Dayton. They get a win against number 25 ranked U of I. They got swept by Marquette, but they've never been able to figure out Marquette over the last couple of years.
I mean, but they got bodied by Evansville too, which is probably one of the middle of the pack teams in the Missouri Valley. I mean,
they are at this point, a couple weeks in the season, they are the ISU team is bottom of the Missouri Valley Conference.
Ugh.
Just by record, by how these games are going, by how many sets it's taking, the fact that only their second win in the season against the Sycamores had to take 5 sets. It's interesting.
You didn't have Sarah Kushner.
But the team's a team at this point. I mean, Caitlin Prozinski. You lost Nicole Lund indefinitely. I don't know how long Sarah's going to be gone, but she has a pretty significant ankle injury.
I think Allie is kind of eased the expectations, especially after being picked as like the Missouri Valley Conference favorite. She kind of changed the narrative into being like, this is going to be a rebuilding year, which I don't hold her accountable for that.
No.
There were so many unforeseen circumstances that led to that. That wasn't the goal when the year started.
No, absolutely not. And you said it, Dane, it's a rebuilding year. We have no expectations going into this year. All we want to see is...
We had expectations.
I mean, I think so. I think we had expectations when we had...
Nicole Lund and Caitlin Prozinski.
Kushner.
That's what I'm saying. So now you have to look at the season through a completely different lens and just see what you've got on the roster at the moment in your young freshman.
Evaluate the talent.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to throw it over to the ice and the hardwood here, talking a little bit about professional sports. We'll be right back on the Red Zone. Welcome back into the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of a Redbird Nation. That was Dan Muller cueing us into the bump there, former NBA player himself. We're going to talk a little bit about the NBA here in this upcoming segment before we talk a little bit about the NHL. But first, did you guys watch the Bulls last night?
Oh, you know
I did.
Yeah.
You know I did.
That was impressive. I didn't even know if the Bulls would cover, but they won. They really won.
I'm a little bit skeptical of this team. I like the way it's built. I wanted to see more from P-Will, but I'm also like getting to the point where it's like, let's get something for LaVine while we can. Like, I don't know if we'd be selling
low. We just signed him to such a massive contract. No one's going to take on that contract.
That knee is so concerning to me. It's been it's chronic. And I don't know if it's our training staff too with Lonzo. Like, how is the season just starting? And the whole narrative into the season was this Bulls team will be legit still if they can get healthy. They're down two starters, and we haven't even started the year.
They just beat the Miami Heat without two of their best players. If that's this team's like middle of the pack, I know it's game one, but the Heat had all their guys out there. You got Jimmy Butler, who you know he's got a revenge game against the Bulls every single time.
I think it's a poorly built team, to be honest with you, with the contracts that were given to Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero. Tyler Hero is not a starter in the NBA. He's a great six-man energy guy off the bench. He can't play defense.
Well, I mean, 23 points, you're not going to complain at that every single night. You get that spark off of the bench, and that's huge to get your team riled up.
He's a starter now.
I saw him coming off the bench as a six man.
It was Kyle Lowry,
Caleb Martin, I believe.
Harrow did start, but yeah. I was impressed to see that. I didn't know about Tyler Harrow's contract, 4 years, $130 million, they said during the game.
Terrible deal.
It feels like that's a lot for the Heat for a player that's just maybe now blossoming into a starter, as Blake was saying.
It's one of those things where he's like a tongue-in-cheek starter. It's like the Manu Ginobili situation. And I'm not comparing the two players. Their games are nothing alike because Manu could play defense. But Tyler Hero is probably a top 10 scorer of the basketball in the NBA, but he can't play a lick of defense. I think this team is aging quickly. I really like Bam. I like Jimmy, but I just think Kyle Lowry's washed. Tyler Hero isn't that guy. I think he's a great split. Like, I'd rather have Jordan Clarkson than Tyler Hero, and Jordan Clarkson's making way less money. And then their bench, Duncan Robinson, barely plays now after a guy that was like a consistent 35-40% three-point shooter.
You want to talk about bad contracts? Talk about Kyle Lowry's contract. They are not going to get anything for him come the trade deadline. But here's what I'm saying about the Tyler Hero contract. It's a little bit off topic. I know we're talking about the Bulls, but 4 years, $130 million. You get to the trade deadline, your team isn't looking that great. You can match that salary with a lot of good pieces around the NBA for 4 years, $130 million.
Well, let's be real, too. And I'm not saying like the app.
It's not time to be real. It was earlier.
Yeah, I missed it.
Yeah,
I'm sure you did. But let's not overreact here. The Utah Jazz buried the Denver Nuggets, and I still have Denver as a top four team in the West, and the Utah Jazz will be in the Victor Wembanyama conversation. It's game one. We can't overreact. And yes, it was a nice win. DeMar is still DeMar DeRozan. He's so much fun to watch. But this team, it's not built for the postseason. I think they're still a play-in squad.
Yes, because they didn't really do anything to the roster, and that's why I was pretty cynical going into the season. But I was impressed to see them get such a nice win in night one. Yes, it is night one. But when you see things that seem like, okay, maybe this could be better this time around, maybe we will find a way to beat top eight Eastern Conference teams this season, it gets you a little bit hopeful.
There is a team I'm going to overreact on. And I said it before, and I feel like I said it last week when we were talking NBA with Julian. I'm all in on the Pelicans, man.
Did they beat the Nets last night?
Yeah.
I thought I saw
that. By 22.
Yeah.
It wasn't even close.
Yeah, ridiculous.
And the Nets are... they don't have an identity. You're gonna get.
It was terrible to keep that team together, especially after they talked about during the offseason blowing it up.
They should have moved. You're never gonna get the proper assets back for Kevin Durant. But at a certain point, nail it in. This team isn't gonna win a championship. You have Kyrie Irving, who is mental. You have Ben Simmons, who doesn't know how to shoot a basketball, probably should be right-handed and shoots left-handed. And then you have Kevin Durant, who he's on the back nine. Who are we kidding? He's on the back nine.
Well, the thing is, I feel like the Rudy Gobert trade set a precedent for what Kevin Durant's price was going to be.
They ruined the NBA with that.
Exactly. They completely reset the trade market. You give five first-round picks for a guy who's probably eclipsed his best years long, long ago. He's still going to get Defensive Player of the Year nods just because, you know, that's who he is. His name is going to get him in that conversation alone, but you can't
trade. Stifle Tower.
Kevin Durant is 10 first round picks and 3 young players on top of that.
Not in this stage of his career. He's still a top 5 player in the league, like, or top 5 at worst, top 10 player in the league, but he's only got that in him for like another 3 years. We're not talking about a freak athlete like LeBron James. Kevin Durant is an excellent scorer of the basketball. And he's a great player, but I'm not selling the farm for Kevin Durant unless he's the final piece of the puzzle, which I think would have made sense for the Bulls.
But
genuinely,
I agree with you. I don't think anyone should have sold the farm for Kevin Durant. You get 3 more years of good basketball, but that's what they're going to get out of Gobert. And so, like,
it didn't make sense for the Suns to be rumored to sending Ayton, because then the team has a size issue.
How many more good years out of Durant will the Nets get, though, is my problem. Because if your good basketball out of Durant is what we saw last night against the Pelicans, then was it worth it to not try and just get any kind of price?
I think he pulls a Harden.
Maybe they didn't think that they got their price, but they probably still got some really good offers.
Well, guess what? Sorry to interrupt you, Dane, but Tyler Hero, 4 years, $130 million. You don't think KD at the trade deadline, if the Nets aren't playing well, you don't think a little swap to get a young player and a couple of picks maybe from
what
a team that's going to...
I agree with you, but what team is taking on that specific contract?
The Nets. He's saying the Nets in general.
No, I know, but you think the Nets would take on that contract?
I don't see why not. They get a young guy who they can probably look to move for some more picks down the line, pull an Oklahoma City Thunder maybe.
Well, I feel like if they were going to blow it up, they should have done it, at least started in the offseason. Maybe the whole thing is a ruse to just make them think they're competing, and then somebody gets really desperate at the deadline.
All right. That's enough overreacting about the NBA. Let's overreact about some jerseys now, please. And yes. I know I'm the resident hockey guy, but I just have to say I am so happy that Adidas has done with NHL jerseys in the next couple of years, because this is just annoying.
The problem and the predicament with radio is we cannot show you the pictures of the Adidas Reverse Retro Season 2 NHL hockey jerseys, but if you so join us, be so kind, on your phone, Google Reverse Retro Hockey Jerseys 2022-3, and they are interesting. I think Dane hates on them a little bit more than I would. I think there's some winners. I think the Blackhawks are interesting.
They're a loser. They're top 5 loser.
There are some legit winners. I look at the Florida Panthers have a pretty good one. Lightning have a pretty good one, it looks like. The Golden Knights have a really cool new thing with glow-in-the-dark letters in their jersey.
I do love that.
Pretty cool.
It's unique.
And I think in general, even beyond just what we can say about the jersey styles, it's cool to see another league doing kind of what the MLB and NBA have done, where you make more jerseys. Yes, it's for money, but also it just looks cool.
Yeah, but the name is Reverse Retro, and Vegas and Seattle are not 5 years old yet, either of them.
Well, notice that the Kraken's jersey is just their same logo. Yeah. Vegas did some cool old-timey letters.
Well, then what are they doing with Ottawa's? Like, Ottawa's it looks like their home jersey.
It does. They just kind of did more.
Same with
black.
The Hurricanes. We talked about that with the alternate jersey. I feel like I should be describing more of these in case people don't have them pulled up.
Well, Vegas is I think, the winner. Maybe the Kings, because the Kings are going with the Gretzky era.
That is nice.
With the Gretzky era. It almost looks like a queen's crown, but it's a king. It's like the fluffy
white,
like crown royal
purple
looking.
And yellow with the little crown. It is really cool. I love when the teams do the alternate logo, or the Capitals with the Screaming Eagle, or the Oilers got the, what is that, like a little oil thing? What is that in the Oilers
logo?
It's
called the oil drop. I'm a fan of that one. I like the color scheme because it used to just be blue. It was pretty gross. And then if you're a fan of the Mighty Ducks Disney series, the reverse retro for the Ducks is their current color scheme with the old Mighty Ducks of Anaheim jerseys, which I think look really nice, and they'll look sharp.
You guys haven't talked about it once, but the New York Rangers, I think, might have the greatest one of all. You put Lady Liberty in the center of the jersey. I've never seen a New York team actually incorporate the Statue of Liberty into any of their jerseys, which is so weird for me because obviously
you have
the Knicks, and they have City Edition jerseys. Why are you not using the Statue of Liberty, probably the greatest icon in the entire city?
Well, Lady Liberty, the alternate jerseys for the Rangers, that like this is just a kind of a reiteration of it, which I guess is something else I have a problem with. But I like that they did their normal color scheme with an old logo, because with this jersey, they had it with navy blue instead, which I just like brighter colors. It pops better. But Columbus's make no sense to me. The Hurricanes make no sense. This whole thing. The biggest L probably has to go to the Nashville Predators with the derpy Predator coming back.
I used to have that practice jersey without the logo. When I played hockey, I had just a generic yellow and silver and green and blue and every color under the rainbow on a practice jersey. And it was awesome, for that matter. It didn't have the logo, but that's what they're going to look like when they're skating around me in practice in fifth grade.
Speaking of green and that was a good one, Mikey. I'll give you your golf clap for that one.
Oh, thank you.
Speaking of green and yellow, the Minnesota Wild, what are they doing with that?
That's the North Stars color scheme.
That's interesting. Just using the yellow and the green instead of incorporating any of that red, which is so big for their logo. I'm not a fan of it.
Well, that's because it's the North Stars. Like it's the, and I like it better. Like personally, I would love if they'd go back to that color scheme. And then I love the San Jose Sharks paying homage to the California Golden Seals and keeping the Sharks name and then doing the Seals font, which I thought was very clever. And mm-hmm. It works well because the Sharks went back to their full teal. So it still uses teal from their current color scheme, but then throws in a gold. It's cheeky. I like it.
We could talk about the jerseys for probably the whole hour show. Just us looking at our computers and hopefully the listeners having the image pulled up by now. But let's talk about the actual product on the ice. Dane, our resident hockey expert, seems like a lot of teams are just beating up on each other so far. I mean, a lot of 3-3, a lot of 4-2. What do you think? What's the team you've been kind of surprised by early on?
Philadelphia, no doubt. And they're going to come back down to earth. They are brutal. Their roster's bad. John Tortorella has them overperforming, which is like, if I was a Flyers fan right now, which my Uncle Eric is, shout out if he's listening, I would not feel good because this is a generational draft. You want to stink this year. You want to be bad if you're not going to win the cup. The Flyers have legitimately no shot. I do think they have a really great goaltender in Carter Hart that is not worth dealing because he's so young that he's going to be with the team forever. But he might steal them some games, which is going to hurt them. Where for the Chicago Blackhawks and the Arizona Coyotes, their goaltending is going to help them be worse. So
now what you're saying, Dane, is that I have something to look forward to as a casual Blackhawks fan with, I heard, generational talents.
Yes, we talked about this last week, too. There's three guys at the top of the draft where if the Blackhawks finish last, they're guaranteed to get one of Connor Bedard, Matvei Michkov, or Adam Fantilli. And Adam Fantilli plays for the Chicago Steel, so kind of a local guy. He's from Canada. He played with the Steel. He's with Michigan now. So still kind of a local
guy. I like his last name, similar to mine.
Adam Fantilli?
Yeah, Fantilli, Fornelli.
Farinelli.
Speaking of which,
Fornelli.
I think this might be the best segue we've had on the show. Speaking of which, Tom Fornelli joining the show in just a couple of minutes. Guys, I'm looking forward to that. He's probably one of the biggest guests we've had on the show. I mean, yes, he is my second cousin, but he also is a CBS Sports reporter. He's been on Pardon My Take a handful of times, and I think we're going to send it to break. When we get back, Tom is going to be with us. So we'll be right back here on The Red Zone.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
And welcome back into The Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Mikey Fornelli, Blake Bogart, Dane Dreyfuss, and Tom Fornelli joining us here in the studio over the phone. Tom, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on. It's nice to finally be on the show.
So we are here in the ZND studio. Where are you at right now, Tom?
I am in my basement watching football.
What's on tonight?
Well, right now I'm watching Virginia and Georgia Tech. I've also got Troy and South Alabama in a huge Sun Belt showdown for the Sun Belt West. It's the battle for the belt. And then there's, you know, the Cardinals and the Saints coming up in a little bit here, too.
You got a lot of college football writing that you do, so I have a feeling you have a great setup for TVs for watching college football games. How many screens are out in front of you?
I have three televisions set into my wall permanently that I have down here in the basement. But then, you know, on game days, on Saturdays, I will sometimes bust out an iPad or a laptop and just additional screens to make sure that no matter where I look, there's football in front of my face.
So I take it you saw U of I over the weekend, the ranked Illini. What are your thoughts on them early on?
I'm very pleased. It's been a long time since I've had a good Illinois football team to watch. It's pretty rare, so I enjoy when it comes around. But I do think that, I mean, it's not a fluke. Like, early in the season, you kind of wonder when the team's winning games, like, okay, maybe it's just a byproduct of an easy schedule, and then once the Big Ten schedule comes around, things will probably even out. They'll start losing some games. But that's not been the case. This is a team that offensively has been balanced. It's not just a run-heavy team like you kind of always expected from a Brett Bielema team from his days at Wisconsin and Arkansas. They've gotten better as the season has gone along. They have a new first-year offensive coordinator in Barry Lunny, who came from UTSA last season, and every single week the offense looks a little sharper, looks a little more explosive, and just looks better. And then on the defensive side of the ball, they've been fantastic all season long. They're one of the best defenses statistically in the country, and that has been the case every single week. And when you put together a very good defense with a competent offense, especially in the Big Ten West, you start winning games.
Now, speaking of the Big Ten West, they've obviously been just absolute juggernauts this year. Just kidding. But who would you want to see U of I take on in the Big Ten Championship if the season does shake out like it currently stands?
Knock on wood.
Oh, God. Not Ohio State.
Okay.
Anybody but Ohio State, because I genuinely think, you know, the Buckeyes, if you look at them, they haven't played the most difficult schedule yet. They had the big opener against Notre Dame, but the Irish haven't been nearly as good as anybody expected them to be, and the rest of their schedule's been pretty soft, but it's just a tremendously talented team with probably the best quarterback in the country, the best set of wide receivers in the country, one of the best running backs in the country, a great offensive line. It's just everywhere you look on that roster is an NFL player. And while I think Illinois is good and Illinois's got a few NFL players of its own, it just can't match up with Ohio State at every position on the field. So not the Buckeyes. They do play against Michigan in a couple of weeks here, which I think will be a tough game for them, but I think it's a much better matchup. But ideally, Michigan loses a couple games, Penn State or Ohio State loses a couple games, and then Illinois is getting Penn State in the Big Ten Championship. That's the ideal scenario. That is never going to happen, but that is the ideal scenario.
So, Tom, I wanted to give you a chance to sort of prop up another Tom, Tommy DeVito, the quarterback for the U of I. I wanted to go back and talk about a little bit more about how you said that this offense is incredibly balanced, and it's not just run heavy at this point. He's coming off of nearly a 300-yard passing game. How crucial has he been to the success of U of I this season?
Oh, he's the best quarterback Illinois had in a long time, probably since Nathan Shielhouse, who is now an assistant at Iowa State on Matt Campbell's staff, but this is a team that for the last few years has not had a quarterback that has been capable or at least consistent in the passing game. And DeVito, who was, you know, he was a four-star prospect out of high school. He went to high school. He's from New Jersey. He started at Syracuse, and he had some success early there in his career, but there was a change at the offensive coordinator job last season in which they went to an offense that was more kind of run-focused with their quarterback. And while DeVito is, he can move, he's mobile, he's not a guy that you want running. That's not his strength. He likes to stick in the pocket and throw. And Syracuse just had an awful offensive line, and he was just getting bruised and battered every single time he stepped back. So they made the change at quarterback to Garrett Schrader, who was a little bit more of a running-style quarterback to get things going. DeVito entered the portal, comes to Illinois, and he's in an offense that I think is perfect for him because he doesn't have the strongest arm, but he's got a, it's not like he's got a weak arm, but he's got a good arm, but he's mostly accurate. He makes good decisions. So it's a very RPO heavy offense that allows him to either, you know, make the first read and then fire short little slants to his receivers, a lot of bubble screens. And then after Illinois kind of suckers defenses into coming up to stop those kind of screens and slants, they hit him over the top, but he's very good at throwing down the sidelines deep, and I think that's one of his strengths, and I think he's just a perfect fit in the offense for what they're trying to do. So it's been great for him, and I think it's been great for the Illini.
Well, and quarterback play has been huge in the NCAA this year, as it usually is. And then there's also been some injuries, whether it be Quinn Ewers or Bryce Young. But I'm going to give you a little bit scenario where I give you the stipulation of all the quarterbacks being healthy. I need you to start, bench, or cut C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young, and Hendon Hooker.
Oh, God. I'm starting C.J. Stroud. I love C.J. Stroud. I think that he's just so smooth in every single thing he does. I think he's got a strong arm. I think he's got an accurate arm. And I think that he's pretty smart. Like, he's a very good pre-snap. God, now I got to choose between Bryce and Hendon. This is a really difficult one. Hendon is playing awesome. Hendon is doing a terrific job, and I had kind of some doubts about Hendon coming into the season because I thought maybe it was just a system thing, because we have seen Josh Heupel in his previous stops, whether as an offensive coordinator or as his head coach at UCF, he's kind of taken some ordinary quarterbacks, and they've been able to put up terrific numbers in his system. And I didn't know if that was just Hooker was just another ordinary quarterback playing in a system. But the one thing I have seen from Hendon this year is his improvement in reading defenses pre-snap. He knows where he's going before the ball is snapped in every single play. And we saw it last week against Alabama, where he was able to see where his advantage was before the snap was started and just destroy an Alabama defense that is not used to being destroyed by anybody. So I love Hendon Hooker. And that's all a very nice way of me saying I'm taking Bryce Young over Hendon Hooker, because I think Bryce Young is a very special player. And you saw it, even, you know, he's – if you take Bryce Young away from Alabama right now, the funniest thing is Alabama, we consider it a national title team. It's the dynasty. It's one of the premier programs in the country. If you took Bryce Young away from them, Alabama's probably kind of just above average right now. He is carrying that team. They do not have a great set of receivers. They have a very good running back, but their offensive line is not as good as we're used to seeing. And we saw, you know, when they were without him, they had Jalen Monroe. They struggled to get by Texas A&M, and I think they would struggle to get by a lot of teams if you take him away. So I would go, if I'm going 1-2-3, I'm going Stroud, Young, and then Hooker. But they're all three fantastic, and I think all three of them will be playing in the NFL.
Tom, maybe it's just because we're related, but I think your Twitter is one of my favorites on the platform. I think your tweets always make me laugh every day. I got to say, you have your ratings that come out every week, the Fernelli ratings. What's one of the best, hottest takes in a reply you've seen from just absolutely crazy college football fan so far this year?
Oh, God, it's hard to kind of narrow it to one, because the thing is about college football fans is we're all insane, and everybody loves their favorite team, and if you're not a fan of their team, or if you say anything negative about their team, you're going to get yelled at. And I'll just go recency bias. This is not about my ratings, but this morning I got an angry direct message from an Ohio State fan, funnily enough, considering what we were just talking about, because in my quarterback power rankings this week, I've had CJ Stroud at number one all season long, but I bumped him down to number two this week and put up Hendon Hooker, because as we just talked about, Hooker threw for 5 touchdowns last week against Alabama, leads Tennessee to the upset win. First time they've beaten Alabama in 15 years. And if you look at Heisman odds, while C.J. Stroud is still the favorite, Hooker really closed the gap now. It's like Stroud was a runaway favorite going into last week. Now it's much closer. So I moved Hendon Hooker up to number one just for the week in a quarterback power ranking story, which is not exactly, you know, like Woodward and Bernstein crashing Watergate and stuff. It's just a fun little story.
They were just that offended by the story.
Message. Yeah, it's like I get an angry direct message talking about how nobody holds the media accountable and I'm a clown and I shouldn't have my job because I moved CJ Stroud to number two. And I'm just like, bro, what are you talking about? Relax. They're quarterback power rankings. It's not that big of a deal.
Well, I'm thinking your reply should have been, hey, are you coming on Illinois State University's official sports talk radio show tonight to the angry fan? And he would have said no. So you're in the right here.
Well, and you're also, I think you are a clown for not having Graham Mertz in your top five.
Oh, God.
Oh, come on. You know, I'm going to give him some credit, because Graham Mertz on third downs this year has taken some significant steps forward. He's been a better quarterback. The problem is first and second down are still a major problem for Mertz, and he's putting that offense in a lot of bad situations on third down. So he's putting out his fires a lot better, but he's lighting too many of them.
So, Tom, I'm taking a look at your list now. I actually just wanted to pull it up and take a look, and I'm a little confused because I don't see Zach Anikstad cracking the top 10 right now.
I'm happy you know who that is. Maybe in his Minnesota time, maybe. But, yeah, he's our starting QB over here at ISU. Maybe you saw him against Wisconsin.
You know what? I actually do know Zach Anikstad. He started out at IMG in Southern Florida in high school. And you know who he was teammates with?
Who?
Art Sitkowski, who is currently the backup quarterback at Illinois. Sitkowski went to Rutgers. Anikstad went to Minnesota. He's transferred to Illinois State, and Sitkowski transferred from Rutgers to Illinois, and he's the backup behind DeVito. So there's a connection there between Illinois and Illinois State.
There you go.
And with the question on our minds, because obviously the season, it's at its peak. It is the sports equinox. For your final season prediction, we're most likely going to see one, or we're definitely going to see an SEC team. It just depends on which one, because there's some big games coming up. Ole Miss has Alabama, and if Alabama wins, they get right back into the SEC championship most. Like, how many representatives do you think we see from the SEC, and what representatives are there?
Oh, we're going to see two. And they're going to be Georgia and Alabama. And my prediction is that Georgia will beat Tennessee in their regular season meeting. Alabama and Georgia will meet in the SEC championship. Alabama wins close. They both have one loss, and they both get in. And Tennessee fans are furious because they're going to think that their one-loss Tennessee team deserves a spot in there as well. But you'll still have Ohio State, Clemson, and maybe TCU or USC to contend with.
Maybe
so they're not going to bring in three.
Maybe we have a UCF situation where Tennessee just raises a banner either way because they beat Alabama.
Well, Tennessee's athletic director right now, Danny White, was the athletic director at UCF when they did that. So, of course, Tennessee will declare.
I didn't even know that was a connection.
We just created a storyline. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
There we go. Let's run with it.
Let's see if that happens. We'll pull that audio when that happens and just tag a bunch of angry Tennessee fans and see if you get any more direct messages.
That's very part in my take of us, to just create a storyline and just, this is ours, we're taking it to the bank.
Yeah, Blake, did you have one more you said?
No, I'm actually all good for the moment, guys. I thought I'd kick it back over to you.
Well, yeah. I do have one more question. Because, Tom, you are a Bears fan, correct?
Yes. Depends on the game.
Well,
same.
Another scenario, the Bears have the first overall pick. Are you taking another Ohio State quarterback first overall, or with your first rounder, per se?
No, I'm not giving up on Justin Fields yet.
Ooh.
I think that we've seen the last couple of weeks he's getting better and more comfortable in the offense. I think he's behind a terrible offensive line, and I don't think he has a very good receiver core. We saw them drop a couple touchdowns last week in the fourth quarter there on a game-winning drive. We saw Amir Smith-Marset completely destroy two plays against Minnesota 2 weeks ago. I feel like the Bears could have won the last two games because of Justin Fields, and it was the players around Justin Fields that let them down. So if I'm the Bears and I have the first pick, not using it on a quarterback. I'm using it on Will Anderson from Alabama because I need a pass rusher, because that defense, that's the one thing that they are missing right now on the defensive side of the ball that I think would fix a lot of problems there.
Will Anderson is a special player, and there's no doubt that he's been the eyes of every opposing offensive line to stop him, to stop Alabama this year.
Tom, I think that's all we're going to have for college football, but I think we're going to get in, keep it on the gridiron a little bit and talk a little bit about the NFL. I sent you some picks earlier. I don't know if you were able to take a look, but we're going to do our game we do every week called Pick Six, if you'd want to join us and give us your picks for this weekend.
I would be happy to, just as long as you're ready for me to go 6-0 and beat all of you.
Ooh, no shot.
Well, I saw my mom posted the link to today's podcast on Facebook, so I think there's a lot of people with the last name Fornelli I saw in the comments listening in, so we'll see whose picks they follow, mine or yours.
Could you please tell your family to all make picks, too, and let's get a Fornelli family.
A Fornelli family pick'em league.
Yes, please. We'll start late.
I think Tom would just rule
like
that entire league. Yeah. So we're going to make our picks, starting with Green Bay and Washington this week. Now, Dane is a Packers fan, as you heard the little ugh there, but the rest of us are Bears fans. So I have sadly had to pick the Packers weeks in a row. I picked them the last 2 weeks. I said, you know what? There's no way they lose, and I was wrong both times. I'm just going to have to go with what's hot and what's not. I'm just going to have to go with the Commanders.
Stop.
Heinicke is starting now.
Stop it.
And Dane himself said in the office earlier that he thinks McLaurin's going to have a big game, so let's see it happen.
I didn't say he's going to have a big game because he's going to have Jair on him, but I think McLaurin is one of the best buy lows in fantasy, so just a little fantasy tidbit there. But Fornelli, I think your relative is going to disagree with you.
Tom, what do you think?
Oh, no, we're going with the Commanders. Aaron Rodgers is washed up. That team is just imploding on itself. It is a disaster in Green Bay. Meanwhile, the Commanders, best thing in the world happened to them. Carson Wentz broke his fingers. So now they can put a real quarterback out there in Taylor Heinicke.
Yep.
The Commanders are on the verge of taking off and joining the NFC East race, and it starts this week with a win over the Packers.
Love to hear it. Dan, do you even want to say the Packers after that?
I mean, like, a guy that gets paid to talk about sports just took the Commanders.
So take the Commanders.
So in true Dane fashion, we're going with the Packers,
oh,
baby. Because I love to fade everything that is right in the world. We're going Packers.
Blake.
Here's the thing about Aaron Rodgers. Every single year, he needs a kick in the rear end to remind him that he is incredibly petty and spiteful.
Fair.
Last year, it was the Saints game. They lose 38-3 in embarrassing fashion in Jacksonville, Florida. Blech. Then the year before that, they lost like 35-3 or whatever it was against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He looked horrible. After that, they got their season started. I'm taking the Packers in true fashion. I don't think that Taylor Heinicke has it in him to get over that Packers defense. I do agree with you, Dane. I think Terry McLaurin is going to be shut down by Jair, and I think across from him, Rasul Douglas is going to take care of Jahan Dotson. So give me the Packers in this one.
Our faculty advisor, Steve Cease, also told me he went with the Packers, meaning only people with the last name Fornelli are riding with the Commanders, and we're going to get the win this weekend.
Doesn't fall too far from the tree.
Looking now to the Bengals and Falcons, where we have one of the hottest teams in America if you're going against the spread. with the Falcons. But I personally am going to go against it again and go with the Bengals in this one. I really don't have too much evidence. They are at home, though, and I always like to favor the home teams. Dane?
I'm going to go with the Bengals here. T. Higgins has been the healthiest he's been in 3 weeks. I think A.J. Terrell is going to be on Ja'Marr Chase. I have some fantasy bias. I have T. Higgins in three leagues. I'm going with the Bengals.
Like, yeah, I mean, that Atlanta defense outside of Grady Jarrett and A.J. Terrell looks rough. I mean, they just traded away Deion Jones as well, so they're looking to be tanking. I'm going to go with the Bengals in this one.
Tom, what are you thinking?
Oh, everybody at home, put all your money on the Falcons because it's a clean sweep. I'm on the Bengals here, too. This is just they're too good for the Falcons. And the Falcons are a fun story in that they're not good, but they're kind of entertaining. So it's like they're a bad team that kind of sticks around. And
they're what the Bears should be.
Better teams. Yeah, it's exactly. They're exactly what I wish the Bears would be like.
Exactly.
Hey, be fun, be entertaining, and lose. But I can't get all that. But I think the Bengals will win this game, but the Falcons will make it closer than people realize.
And I'm such a Mariota stan. He's probably my favorite college quarterback of all time at Oregon.
Speaking of what's hot and what's not, let's talk about the Jets and the Broncos. Two teams that one is hot and one is not. With the Broncos, just can't seem to figure it out, and the Jets coming off a win against the Packers. I'm going to go with the strategy I've been doing the whole day. I'm going to stick with the Jets for this one. Dane, what do you think?
I think this is the breeziest pick, and by breezy, I mean Breece Hall. I'm going with the Jets. I don't know. Is Denver favored at all in this one? I feel like the Jets have to be favored, even though they're going into Mile High. I don't know anyone that would fade Robert Saleh. I think him and Brian Daboll are got to be your two front runners for coach of the year. Like, no questions.
Like, I don't disagree with you at all on that one, Dan. I'm kind of concerned now. I'm shaking in my boots a little bit over here because I originally had Denver walking into the booth. Since then, I have changed it to New York because I thought it was going to be, you know, I thought it was going to be the lone wolf on this one. But I'm going to stick to my guns here. I'm going to take New York to beat Denver in Mile High.
Tom, what do you think?
You're all picking the New York Football Jets to go on the road and win a game.
It's a crazy world we live in.
The New York Jets. Now, give me the Broncos. Broncos country, let's ride. Listen, I understand that they have not lived up to expectations and that Russell Wilson, the robot, is not performing at his best. But that's exactly why I want to buy them. I'm buying low on the Broncos right now. They're going to surprise some people. This is a game which I think at home against the Jets team that has won, but it's a Jets team that's been kind of lucky at times considering who it's played and who, the quarterback situation of the teams that they have played. I think the Broncos are going to be able to rally, pull this one off at home. It's going to be a lot harder than it probably should be, but they'll get the dub.
Broncos country, let's ride.
So you didn't even know that we had that soundbite there, the Broncos country, let's ride, but I appreciate you saying it. And we have Steve Cease, our faculty advisor, who also went with the Broncos. So us youngins also agreed on the Jets. Let's talk a little bit now about Sunday night football, the Steelers and the Dolphins. Tua Tagovailoa, I believe he's going to be playing, correct? He was cleared to play. So we're going to look at this game and I wanted to ride with Money Mitch. I love what they did against the Bucks last week. I really did. I really wanted to ride with Mitch, but I can't. I think if Tua's even half of what he was before all that happened and this Miami offense, they can't be stopped. I'm going to go with Miami.
I'm going to go Miami here too. Tua's the game changer there. I probably still go Miami if they have Skylar Thompson. I would have went Pittsburgh if they started Teddy Bridgewater. And I don't know why that is. I just feel like he's a guy that finds a way to cover the spread, but never been the guy. It's just weird. But I'm just gonna stick with the Miami pick.
Blake, what do you think?
I'm so terrified that after what happened to Tua, he's gonna come out throwing the ball right-handed in this one, and he's gonna be completely off the grid. I still have to go with Miami, though. I don't think that Pittsburgh. Matt Canada he's a horrible offensive coordinator. If he gets to keep his job in the next year, it'll be a disappointment for Steelers fans. But I'm gonna take the Dolphins in this one.
Tom?
Yeah, Matt Canada was LSU's offensive coordinator in 2018. Ed Orgeron pretty much wanted to choke him out, fired him, brings in a new offensive coordinator in Joe Brady for 2019, and the Tigers go on and win the national title. And it is very weird for me to say because, I mean, I'm twice your age, and my entire life the Steelers have been good, but the Steelers stink this year. So give me the Dolphins. I think, you know, two, I'm always worried about him getting hurt because he can't seem to play two straight games without suffering some kind of injury, but I just think they're the much better team than Pittsburgh.
You know, we have two picks left, but I kind of want to get your opinion for a second. Where are the Dolphins at? Let's say Tua kind of comes back and he's a little bit better to where he once was. Where do the Dolphins look at for the rest of the season? Is it you know, championship or bust year?
No, they're a playoff team, but they're not a Super Bowl contender, I don't think. I think, you know, honestly, I think Mike McDaniel's kind of a millennial Mark Trussman, so.
I kind of like that. He has the look, too. Is that me calling him a nerd?
I think a little bit. They both have that nerdy quality. Nerd, yeah. Whatever it is, Mike McDaniel's really good at press conferences. I saw he's been doing that lately. He's just really good at it. I'd love to be a reporter down there for the Dolphins. But now we have Monday Night Football.
Did you get Steve's pick?
Oh, no. Sorry about that. Steve's pick was Miami. I just skipped over because it was a sweep.
Oh,
but it was also Miami.
Fair enough.
And Monday Night Football, the Bears and the Patriots. Are we surprised who I'm going to pick? Do we know who I'm going to pick?
Grossly surprised.
Please don't do it, Mikey.
Do we know who I'm going to pick?
Dude, I know what I have to do, but I kind of want to hear
what Thomas to say first. Tom, what do you think?
Oh, the Bears. I'm not going to pick Mac Jones and the New England Patriots. Come on, the Patriots aren't any good either. This is going to be an ugly football game. It's going to come down to just one or two plays, maybe a turnover here or there. And I don't know if you saw Bill Belichick's press conference this week, but he spent about 25 minutes talking about how great the Chicago Bears are. So Belichick knows, I know, the Bears are going to win this game.
Dame, what do you think?
Belichick pumps up bad players at every press conference, and I'm so rattled with myself for not taking Ramondre Stevenson in any of my leagues when I knew Damian Harris was due for some huge injury. The Bears' run defense couldn't stop a nosebleed. Give me the Pats all the way.
Blake?
Yeah, I kind of going off of what you said, Dan. I remember a Tom Brady interview he did with with LeBron James as well. He was like, anytime I see a bad cornerback, I'm going after that guy in a press conference, and I'm saying, man, he's so talented. I can't wait to face off against him. That's what Belichick is doing here, and I'm never gonna bet against Bill Belichick at home. Nonetheless, give me the Patriots.
Rumor has it he loves Jalen Johnson.
Does he really now?
Yeah.
That terrifies me quite a bit.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think it'll be 46-10, but I think the Bears will rematch a championship from January 1986 and beat the Patriots in this one. You know, fun fact, Bill Belichick was 42 years old when the Bears won that game. But, yeah, I think this is going to be an interesting one. I think I saw nothing to make the Bears seem redeeming against the Commanders last week, but I'm still going to ride with the Bears. And like Tom said, I just don't think the Patriots have proved they really have that system that Belichick was so famous for. It's kind of fallen off a little bit, so we'll see what happens in that one. Steve also went with the Patriots on that one as well. Now we're going to move on to Thursday Night Football, our last pick of the day, and obviously the game that's going to kick off right after the show. That's going to be a tough one to pick, New Orleans and Arizona. I'm going to go with the Saints on this one. We talked a lot today in the office, Dan, about Taysom Hill.
Oh, you're spoiling it, man.
Well, no, I'll let you say your bet. But I think when they're in the red zone, he's a reliable player to be there for him. I saw a stat that compared him to Walter Payton. I think that's way too far. But
we live in the cherry-picking era of stats where you can literally make Jameis Winston look like
exactly.
Tom Brady, which is the best thing ever.
Exactly. And I think I'm going to go with the Saints on this one because it is also double XP weekend for Call of Duty, I believe, right? So Kyler Murray will just be checked out. Dane?
I know Taysom Hill is going to score 2+ touchdowns. I know he's going to have over 25 rushing yards, and I love the Saints to win this game. My dad is a diehard Cardinals fan, and I know he's listening and nodding his head and going, Kyler Murray is too short. Give me the Saints.
I changed a lot of my picks since sitting here with you guys and hearing all your picks, and hearing Dane go with the Saints is only making me confident in picking the Cardinals. They're 0-3 to start. They're 0-3 at home to start the season. They are absolutely due for a win at home, and getting back DeAndre Hopkins is going to revitalize this team, which looks like they haven't had a spark on offense all season long. Give me the Major League Redbirds in this one.
I sent a text from my friend Tim.
I'm on the Cardinals.
Uh-oh, now I feel really bad.
I sent a text from my buddy Tim, who's been telling me to lock on the Cardinals all day, but he just said Saints, really? So I'm glad to see he's listening. But, yeah, no, I'm going with the Saints in this one. Tom, what were you saying about the Cardinals?
I'm on the Cardinals, too. I look at New Orleans in this game. I mean, Andy Dalton starting or Jameis Winston, it doesn't matter to me. They're both pretty much the same. They're missing Michael Thomas. They're missing Jarvis Landry. They're missing their tight end, Adam Trautman. They're down their starting left guard. This is a beaten-up team, and now you've got DeAndre Hopkins coming back. I think that will solve a lot of problems for this Arizona offense, which has been struggling. And I think that at home, the Cardinals are finally going to show their home fans a win. So give me the Cardinals.
And Steve Cease also went with the Cardinals. Tom, we're going to let you go before the end of the show here, but if there's anything else you want to share about anything with this weekend of the NFL, by all means, the stage is yours. Illinois State students are listening.
And the NFL, I've got really nothing left. I shared all my thoughts. I don't have any picks in for it yet, but I will say, if you're looking for a bet to make this weekend,
love it.
Best bet on the board, Purdue plus 2.5 on the road against Wisconsin. The Badgers should not be favored over the Boilermakers. The Boilermakers are a much better football team.
I love it. As a Badger fan, I love disappointment. I'm also a Blackhawks fan, and I can't wait to go to the Red Wings game tomorrow where they play the Blackhawks and bet on the Red Wings in the new FanDuel Sportsbook in the United Center. That is not an advertisement. That is just me being a moron.
That's just a plug. Tom, we appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on, and we hope to have you on again soon.
Thanks for having me. I had a great time.
Yep, thanks, Mike. That was Tom Fornelli, of course, here joining the Red Zone. Guys, I enjoyed that. I'm glad we got to have him on for the whole half an hour there and talk some football.
He's unreal. Like, I'm a huge Pardon My Take fan. I know Big Cat might have stiffed us on Twitter, but it always catches my attention when I ever see him have Tom Fornelli on, but he is just, his knowledge is palpable.
Well, it's funny because every time he goes on, and I've gotten texts from friends and also just when I've listened, every time he goes on, just hearing those guys on that show just start saying his name, it's like, what the heck? That's, you know, I shouldn't be, my name shouldn't be on this show. This is a show I'm listening to and I have nothing to do with, but it's just funny. Blake, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, I'm feeling awfully confident about myself. Tom practically regurgitated what I said about the Cardinals. They're due for it. The Saints stink. Andy Dalton can't play football. We saw it firsthand last year for Chicago guys. He should not be a starting quarterback in the NFL. I'm sure he'd be a great player in the Chase Daniel role, sort of in a backup position, but and I just don't like him.
I'm going to tell you what. Taysom Hill's going to tell you to mess around and find out. Mess around and find out. It's Taysom time, baby. Broncos country, let's cry.
What do the Broncos have to do with Taysom Hill?
I don't know, man. Like, I don't know. What does Subway have
to do with quarterbacks?
What does Subway have to do with Russell Wilson? Why is he on my YouTube advertisements every day? And he's terrifying.
I think Taysom Hill would be a good spokesperson for Subway if Russell Wilson ever just completely falls off.
Let's get it in the works.
I think it's coming.
If Russell Wilson falls off, Mike, you've been watching TV lately.
You know, well, he's got 5 more years on the contract or something. He's bound to figure out at some point.
He might be holding punts in a couple of years.
You know, Tom is a pretty big guest. If Taysom Hill is a great game, let's shoot for the moon. Let's get Taysom Hill on the horn.
Dane, I'm going to leave that one up to you. You're going to have to talk to his people. We'll have to see. I don't know if any of us are related to Taysom Hill, so that might be a little hard to figure
I got some friends over in Mormon country by BYU where Taysom's from. Maybe we can get some going.
I think I'm distantly related to Richard Dreyfuss, an actor in Jaws. Wait, was he canceled? I can't remember.
Well, now we're talking over the out here, so I will talk to you guys later. This has been The Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
WZND.com or on iTunes. And, of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.